murder. Swerving with my circus, looking for a purpose. Pseudo clean record, hope got another surface.
All right, man, we're live. No, I'm just basically. Hey, it was weird. I don't know. Dude, I don't know what platform you use. By the way, welcome back to Eyes. Actually, I don't know if it's welcome back because I don't think you've ever been on our show before. We've been to yours.
Conservative. Yeah, Isaac was on.
Maybe I wasn't there. I don't know. First time caller.
You probably weren't there as usual.
Remember, Roger had to missed it because he had some internet issues. So
I was on the road.
Yeah. Yep.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, so everybody, introduce Roger, long-time listener, first-time caller. You know, welcome to C3, Roger.
Yeah. Hey, I appreciate it. I think that's why Isaac, you know, again, from the Cajun Conservative podcast, I think that's why he comes on our show, because he sees how crappy our platform is, and it makes him feel that much better about what he's got back home. So, good stuff.
Oh, man, I love y'all's show, bro. I don't get to hear it as much as I want to, but hey, now I'm in a dump truck majority of the time, so I can hear y'all a lot more now.
Well, you know, that's, I was just about to say, you know, the Cajun Conservative, you know, for our listeners out there, you can catch him weekly. So, you know, when it takes C3, you know, 2 to 3 weeks to get an episode out, you know, you can fill that void by going over to the Cajun Conservative and giving him a listen, because Isaac is probably one of the most consistent podcasters out there, you know, that we listen to. So, yeah,
I'm gonna be honest with you. It takes a lot, man. With ministry, a 50-hour-a-week job, there's a lot of nights I stay in the studio till about 12 and have to be up for work for 5 o'clock in the morning. So
yeah, because you're doing two podcasts, not only the Cajun Conservative, but you also have Brothers Just Searching, correct?
Yeah, Brothers Just Searching time flies, for almost 4 years now. The Cajun Conservative is the little sister in the family, because I started November of 2020, right after, you know, all the election cycle, you know, people were calling me, asking me, hey, who won the presidency? And I was like, hey, let's get a podcast going to explain a lot of stuff going on. So Cajun Conservative's about to get into his third year, or has passed his third year, and Brothers Just Searching is about to have his fourth birthday. So
I love it, man. That's awesome. Hey, for y'all listening, man, seriously, get over and give Isaac a listen on the Cajun Conservative. Because like I said, he's very consistent. He puts it out once a week. Us here at C3, we could probably take take some notes on that and learn some lessons, because, you know, sometimes it takes us a couple weeks to get one out.
But in y'all defense, guys, y'all three guys trying to meet up in one place to do it. I'm by myself, you know, I took the route of Rush Limbaugh, where it's me, myself, and I in the studio. So it's easier to get myself here. If I can't get myself here, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, that's very true. I'm just waiting for Roger one day to break up the band, and he's going to go solo or something and do his own thing.
Nah, it's more entertaining with all three of us. And Isaac's got that thing they call that dedication and determination that we lack over on C3. No, you know what? I think lately it's just, you know, it's we were talking about it a couple months ago. We're like, man, you know, we were kicking ass the first year and putting stuff out regularly. And you know, Luke was like, well, yeah, because of COVID and everybody was at home and you had nothing else to do. So all we did was sit at home every week and bitch and complain about COVID and the COVID regulations and whatever state we're living in at the time, and then get on C3 and start, you know, raging about it. So now we're all back to our day jobs and traveling and stuff like that. Yeah, it is definitely a lot more difficult. And unfortunately, I don't think we are as entertaining doing solo. Of course, Josh did that. He's kicked it out a couple of times where, you know, I thought he was going to do a solo the other day, but he wussed out.
Dude, the world loves plans. They love tasty, tasty plans, right? We man plans and God laughs. Yep. You know, I was going to jump on that Saturday night. And, the wife took a cruise, with her cousin. They did a little girl's cruise, and, it was good, you know, cause she needed to get out of the house and, you know, a little break and stuff. And so Saturday evening, I was going to jump on and just, you know, do a monologue, you know, so we could get some content out. And then I realized, I was like, oh, well, I'm not done packing, because I was leaving, you know, the next day for a work trip and, that I'm on right now. And then, you know, turned around, and as I was packing, I realized that I was like, oh, some of the cleaning stuff that I was supposed to do this week, I haven't done yet. And I've got to get it done because I leave tomorrow morning. So I left Sunday morning, you know, and my wife came in Sunday evening. And I was like, oh, I got to get that done. Like, that's, you know, like, I like that's taking priority. So I got busy. And the next thing you know, it was old man bedtime. And I was like, happy, I can't keep my eyes open.
Happy wife, happy life. Remember that, you know.
Oh, 100%, man. 100%.
Hey, you know? Roger, I got to tell you something, though, man. You can hear Josh as a guest host on the KG Conservative show. He did fill in for me already one time. And he knocked it out the park, man.
Yeah, he's pretty good, man. Josh has got a lot of anger pent up. And, you know, between Luke and myself every day on the text, that's what we do. We just try to we push. You can't push the big button with Josh. You got to push the little buttons throughout the day. You know, you do a couple of good things and you go down this little rabbit hole and then you kind of bring him back a little bit. Then you run him down the rabbit hole a little bit. So he's pretty entertaining. We'll give that to him.
Yeah. No, yeah, I remember that, Isaac. You were sick. You were under the weather.
Yeah, I think I had a speaking engagement or something going on. I'm not sure.
Was it? Okay, yeah.
It was something like that. Could you remember it got canceled? I was like, look, I didn't prepare. I was like, dude, you could have it. And I can't produce the show. I was producing my own show with a guest host.
I love it. That's good, though. Yeah, man, that was fun. It was fun. I definitely enjoyed it.
Yeah, and the way I do it is three segments. You get what I'm saying? And look, God has blessed me where I have some affiliates that I'm dealing with, thanks to Hair Club and Givaderm, and then I have a local sponsor now. So those two breaks come in very handily to put ad spots in there. But you know, so I do three segments, and that gives me a break because if y'all know, y'all heard the show, I get angry sometimes. You know, and I have a Dr. Pepper, I have a root beer right on the side of me. During that break, that thing gets chugged down, then I'm starting back again.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's, you know, for anybody who listens to you, you know, they know it's like we get passionate and, you know, we're passionate about the things that we talk about because those things matter. You know, and, you know, people, you know, for the folks who listen to us and, you know, sometimes we'll get talking about, you know, WWF and old school wrestlers or football or whatever that we're talking about, you know, those things really don't matter. But the things that we get heated with each other, we get heated, you know, and get passionate about, those are the things that matter. And it's because we care, you know, so nah, man, it's good. So you got some advertisers now and stuff. How much is your platform grown since you started it?
Man, since I've started 3 years ago, I believe, let me go look at my analytics on my phone. I believe we passed over 17,000 plays. Nice. That's all the episodes. Our episodes range maybe 25 to 30 listeners. So breaking news, I just got the 18,000 play right now. So 18,000 plays. Going strong. The last 3 months, well, the last 30 days, we have an average of about 1,000 plays, rounded off, about 900 to 1,000 plays. And
that's awesome.
That's two episodes. And I've even considered doing three shows a week. It's just impossible to do right now with a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, man, we've grown. YouTube is, y'all know YouTube. YouTube is kind of stagnant a little bit. Trying to work on the Rumble channel, websites, and all that stuff. It's grown pretty much. It is gone way beyond what I expected it to be.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing that people actually give a crap about what you say? I mean, that's my thing. It's like when we first started this, I'm like, dude, who is going to listen to us three yahoos sit here and ramble on for an hour? Because initially when we were talking about it, we were debating like, okay, if we do an hour show, it's like once a month, right? So if we do a 45-minute show, then we can do once every 2 weeks. 30-minute show, we do once a week. And if we did a 15-minute show, we could do once a day or whatever. And we always get on the man. We're going to be able to, you know, get this thing to 2 hours. And the next thing you know, it's like, hey, guys, we're at a data limit here. We got to cut this thing short. And people actually listen. I'm like, holy cow, man. People actually listen and people actually give a crap. But I think it goes back to what Josh said. And this is what I think is different on, you know, whether we're independent conservatives or conservatives, whatever you call it, is, you know, we're passionate about it, but we're educated about the issues. Like Josh and I will disagree and we'll go round and round about some things with Trump and other political things, but he's not coming from a place of ignorance. Like I understand his stance. I know where he's coming from. He knows the issues. The frustrating piece is, well, I know the issues too, and you just don't see it the way I do, right? As opposed to arguing like what we see going on with Palestine and Israel that we, you know, we talked about recently. But, you know, it's like a lot of the folks on that side of the house, they're arguing from a place of ignorance. And that's frustrating. That is very, very tough to do. And especially when you get on X and you start Xing and right. It's like, yeah, dude, I'm talking to a head of lettuce. You know, it's extremely frustrating.
Roger gets frustrated because he knows I'm right.
I haven't gotten the conversation yet, so y'all don't know. No, but I agree with you, Roger. You look, I see this a lot on TikTok, dude. I remember I put out a video the other day, and all I did was it was a filter that showed the a hypothetical poll, and it had Donald Trump and Biden, and it put Trump winning 80%. I hope that happens in 2024. But anyway. But it showed, and I just gave a thumbs up, I gave a thumbs up, like, yeah. And some TikTok user, like you said, it was, I call them cabbage heads. That ain't a real poll, right? And I'm like, no, duh. I got this from TikTok. I didn't get this from Fox News or CNN. Come on. And I was like, you're that ignorant that you're going to think that I really believe. Come on. I was born some time back, but it wasn't yesterday. So, they must think of Bobby Boucher. I don't know.
Now, speaking of polls, that's a good segue, and we didn't actually plan this, but okay, and everybody knows, I'm a big Trump supporter. I've already said, I'll vote for DeSantis in the primary, reasons I've already stated, but polling is coming out now, and I kind of want to get your take on it, where basically they're showing Trump ahead in every swing state except for, was it Michigan or Wisconsin?
Wisconsin had Biden up by 2, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, maybe it was Wisconsin. Then. So basically, he's ahead in Georgia, he's ahead in Pennsylvania, he's ahead in Arizona, he's ahead in Nevada, and he was ahead in Michigan. And then the same polling showing that he's going to get, I think right now it's like 22% of the black vote. I hate nationwide polls because it doesn't really matter. It really comes down to Georgia and Pennsylvania. And then after that, there's a lot of other states that get involved or what have you. But I don't know, man. I think that's I don't know who put the poll out. I can't remember where. I think I saw it on Fox News. So I didn't see the little bottom there to see who actually put it out. But it almost feels to me like it's a liberal media company that's like, hey, we need to start fear-mongering. We need to get the Democratic base out because there is a lot of data out there suggesting that a lot of Biden voters aren't going to make it to the poll. And just because they're not motivated, right? They're not motivated. So I kind of want to get your thoughts on the poll. How close do you think they are? Do you think in those battleground states, Trump's really that far ahead? Or
So this is what I look at every poll, Roger. I don't trust polls to begin with. Look, let's go back through history. 2016, every poll said that Donald Trump was going to lose in a landslide to Hillary Clinton. Thank God he broke that. That was false. But in 2020, you remember, even liberal polls had Donald Trump winning going forward. Right. Now, a lot of them had Biden. They were trying to, always virtual tie. But there was a lot of polls that showed Donald Trump winning, and he didn't win in 2020. Now, y'all probably like me. You have strong feelings and strong opinions about the 2020 election. But there was a lot going on there. And even in 2022, you had Republicans quoting every poll in the book saying, look, we're going to win the House and possibly the Senate. And, we're just not going to win the House by a slim majority. We're going to win it by 20, 30, 40 seats. We had instead of a red wave, we had a red trickle, and we got the House, but we didn't get the Senate. Now we have more problems than we ever had. So going forward, I really don't put my faith in polls. But at the same time, like you said, look who put it out. It was New York Times. New York Times did this poll. Gotcha. And then right after, I think ABC released a poll with some of the same data. So is Donald Trump winning in these states? I can't say yes, but at the same time, I tend to believe that way because we have millions of people in America right now, millions living paycheck to paycheck. Heard today that the credit card loans and the credit cards are just through the roof, the debt. We're paying right here in Louisiana. I don't know how it is in y'all states, but we're paying about $2.65 to $2.85 a gallon. When Trump left office, the day that Trump left office, I remember we was paying $1.75 a gallon here in the state of Louisiana. You have 8 million people crossing over the border. A lot of these, Nevada, Arizona, they're impacted by the border. So do I want to believe that Trump's winning by a landslide? Yes, absolutely. I want to believe that. But I always put caution because Sean Hannity said it the best way on his radio program today. Well, a guest on Sean Hannity's said, listen, New York Times is faithful for this. About a year out, they always run a poll that the Republicans are winning. And as slowly it gets to the election, it's funny how the Democrats always gain ground. So it could be a fear-mongering thing. I didn't think of that view of it, but it could be that too, that they could be trying to get Biden out of office because this Israel-Palestine war is really taking a toll on his presidency right now.
Yeah. So I think on the poll thing, and I didn't, and Roger put this in our text group, yesterday or something. And so I think it's a good point. When you look at it through that lens, the other thing too, back in 2016, it really started in 20. I think it kind of started in 2012 when, you take a look at these polls. I, for one, have never been polled. All right. So I don't know who they're polling. But also people have figured out that they can skew those polls.
Yep.
And a lot of people didn't want to admit that they were voting for Barry, back in 2008 and 2012. A lot of people did not want to admit that they were voting for Trump in 2016. Right. And so when they got that poll, that's why, I think that's one of the reasons why those polls in 2016 were like Hillary Clinton's going to mop the floor with this guy. Because I think part of it, not all of it, but I think part of it was people were getting polled and they were like, who are you voting for? And, so they didn't draw the ire of their, family, friends and neighbors and stuff. They said, Hillary Clinton. Okay. You're right. And, the same thing in 2020. So I think we're seeing some of that with these polls. And, in Isaac, you pointed out, it's coming from the New York Times. It's suspect to begin with. And, like Roger said, national polls, I don't put any faith in national polls because that's too, it's too broad of a swath of, of people. But, the polls that are conducted in states, by independent groups, which are few and far between, I get that. Those are the ones that, I may put a little bit more faith in, but I don't put a whole lot of faith in polls to begin with. I mean, you talk about gas, I would kill to have $2.65 gas right now, because where I live in North Carolina, it hasn't been below $3 since COVID. Wow. And I mean, right now at the pump, it's $3.25, $3.30 at the pump where I live in North Carolina. And it has been since COVID.
And you see that's the point. That's the point I want to bring out. Like tonight, look, at the time of this recording, there's elections happening in Mississippi, Virginia,
Kentucky.
There's a lot of Ohio on an abortion bill. And look, if you notice the coverage of these elections, it's the abortion. Let's focus on the abortion issues because they know that drives Democrat votes. But look, Virginia might have a full red wave tonight that they can have the Senate and the House and their legislation, plus Glenn Youngkin's there. So you're going to have a lieutenant governor, a governor, a secretary of state, and all their legislation run by Republicans for the first time in God knows how long. If Kentucky turns, like our great state of Louisiana did, turn red, that shows that people do not trust the left-leaning Democrat Party. I call them the Communist Party of America. And it's showing the shift. And I think what this poll does show, if it shows anything, that, hey, look, people are starting to realize we're not better off than we were 4 years ago. Because in that same poll, 26% of Americans said, oh, we're happy the way the country's going. I don't know what morons these people are living, where they're living at, but we're not better 4 years since we were 4 years ago. And I think that's what this poll is showing. Hey, Americans are shifting. Like I said, New York Times, I don't hold my breath with the New York Times, but you got that, like you said, Josh, I think that's just showing what Americans are going through. And the ending of this poll is showing that people are tired of an old man, I call him Crazy Joe, falling upstairs. I'm just...
You know, but you hope that resonates when they go to the ballot box. And Josh has said this a million times. You know, it's it, when you look at your inner cities, your Baltimores, your Detroits, your Chicagos, you know what? They've been like that for decades, and they vote the same way over and over and over again. These people, a lot of these folks will go to the polls knowing they're broke, knowing they're paying more, knowing they have no savings, knowing their wages are down due to inflation, and still vote the same way. Now, hopefully it doesn't happen across the country. And I'm like you. Like, when you look at, and trying to be objective, I get it. You know, I'm on the right side of the aisle. But I try to look objectively. And when you hear about all this Bidenomics and you know, he's got his folks that get out there, his stooges on X and push his agenda, I'm like, who in the hell are the 26 or 30% that agree with the direction the country's going in? I mean, I expect that number to be like 5 or 7%, because you've always got an extreme group out there, 5, 7, 10%, one way or the other, that's, hey, you know, it's all party or whatever. But nothing is going right. And I think you hit it on the head. When you look at, and remove the personalities, okay, look at where you're at now versus 4 years ago, and almost every single metric, you were worse off now. Now, take that beyond domestic, right, and take that to international. Hey, what is it, Josh? 5 embassies now? We've evacuated 5 embassies, okay? We're not even done with this presidency yet, so there might be a couple more left in there. So we've evacuated 5 embassies, and then the big news lately, I think it came out last week, it was 20, and now we've had 40 rocket attacks or 40 attacks against U.S. soldiers or U.S. service members overseas by Iranian-backed, you know, forces, state-sponsored, whatever you want to call it. And we're just, you know, and both of us, you know, having been deployed and sitting on those FOBs and sitting on those COPs, it's like, man, you're a sitting duck, you know. And at that time, you know, it's like, hey, if it's your time to go, it's your time to go. But I'd rather not take in rockets. So I guess my question, and I'll kick it over to Josh to get his thoughts. Do you think across the board, is it just going to be like, well, no, you know what? I just don't like Trump and I like Grandpa Joe. Or do you think people are really going to go in and vote with their wallets? Because you know what? I would love to have $3.20 a gallon. I just came back from Vegas filling up, I drive a diesel. So I'm paying $5 a gallon. And we've been paying, you know, we go from $4.50 to $5, give or take, a couple cents here and there. But do you think that people, because the first time around, they really didn't vote with their wallets because it wasn't bad yet. Now you've had a good 2.5 years of Bidenomics, right? Do you think people are going to go in there and maybe some resemblance of 2016 where you're like, yeah, go Joe. And you get in the ballot, you're like, F that dude, man. I'm tired of paying $5 a gallon and pull another tab.
Roger and I have gone back and forth about this a lot. I don't think so. I don't think people are worried. I don't think a lot of people are going to vote with their wallets, to be honest with you. You know, I think that argument could have been, you know, you could have talked about that in 2000, you know, 2004. You know, it's okay. It's Bush, Kerry, it's Bush, Gore, you know, stuff like that. But in 2008, that's when that election really got polarized. Like, it was polarized, right? Because you had, you know, you have Barry and McCain. And then, you know, later on, you have Barry and Romney. And it wasn't, you know, I mean, granted, now 2012 is a little bit different story. We were in a recession. You know, the housing market, you know, bottom fell out 2008, 2009. So that was an election. You're like, okay, well, you know, who's going to be the best for my 401k and my wallet? You know, it came down to that. But with this one, you have two very polarizing candidates, right? It's kind of like a repeat of 2016. You have two very polarizing candidates. I don't think people are going to vote for, like, well, let me look at the issues. People already have their mind made up before they walk in that polling station who they're voting for, and it's not because of their wallets. I don't think, not the majority of them. There may be some, but they're not going to be the preponderance, you know, of folks. People are going to come out, and the people who dislike Donald Trump, and Donald Trump, hey, you know what? I voted for him twice. If he's a GOP nominee, I'll vote for him again. But Donald Trump draws a massive level of disdain. All right. I mean, I can't overstate it enough how much Donald Trump is disliked by a lot of people on both sides of the aisle. Now, it doesn't make him a bad person. It doesn't make it. You know, I thought he had a good 4 years as president. My 401k was very happy. We didn't start any new wars. You know, you had the Abraham Accords. You had three Supreme Court justices. You had 300 plus, you know, federal judges into the judiciary system. I think those were fantastic accomplishments. But I think a lot of people are going to come out, and it's not that they're voting for, you know, they're not voting for Biden. They're voting against Trump. And I think you're going to have the same thing with Biden. There's a lot of people who dislike Biden, and it's not, and they're going to, you know, they're going to look at it and say, well, I'm not voting for Trump. I'm just going to vote against Biden. So okay. I think the wallet people, I think the people voting for their wallet are going to be few and far between. They'll be out there, but I don't think they're going to be enough to matter.
And I want to add on what Josh said, though, because there's another category of people that Josh didn't mention is the people that's not going to go vote at all. Because I have a friend, a Republican, and he told me he can't stand Trump. And I said, well, what you going to do on election day? And he said, I'm just not going to go vote. I'm not going to vote for Biden. I'm not going to vote for Trump. Now, that you can have that logic, but don't complain the next 4 years if Biden gets elected or if Trump gets elected. Because, you know, look, I don't like Robert Kennedy, but you can go vote for Robert Kennedy if you want. But that's a whole nother bag of donuts right there that we could talk about. But there's those Republicans, and I know a lot of them, that have already told me, look, if it comes down to Biden and Trump, we're not going to vote. And that's a sad reality as well, because you're not going to execute your right as an American citizen to put the person you think is best fit in there. Now, like me, it's going to come down to the lesser two evils, because I'm public on this. I do not support Trump right now. I think Ron DeSantis would be a better candidate for the presidency. Does it look like Ron DeSantis is going to get it? No, Donald Trump will be the nominee for 2024. But at the same time, like, I'm like, y'all guys, if it comes down to Biden, Trump, well, guess what? Trump got my vote all day long. And I think that's what people need to realize. They should look with their wallets. They should look at the issue. And the issue is, are we better off 4 years? Are we better off 4 years after Trump? And we're not. Like I said, this the border and the gas prices that we talked about, just those two issues alone should carry Trump over the threshold.
Hey, I got a real quick question before Roger jumps in for you, Isaac. Do you think that Trump can beat Biden?
Yes, I honestly do. The reason I say that is because, look, I'm going to ask y'all a question. Can y'all mention one good thing Biden has done in the last 4 years?
I got nothing.
And look, even the stuff that he prized on, Biden economics, the stimulus packages, and the infrastructure bills, they all flops. We don't know where the money. Look, I haven't seen a new bridge in a long time. Where all that money's going? I think that the Biden probes are getting to him. The impeachment inquiries and all that. People are starting to the stench that they were hoping that Donald Trump would get. The Republicans are doing it totally opposite. They look, we're really doing investigations. We have subpoenaed these people. We have found bank records. It ain't just a made up story that Nancy Pelosi did. So I think that's starting to catch up with him. I'm going to make an even stronger point. Any Republican candidate, even Chris Christie, probably could beat Joe Biden. It's hard to, you know, I'm just saying that's how bad of a candidate Joe Biden is. So that's why I think Trump would win in a landslide, according to the New York Times. But I personally think if there's no shenanigans that happens, Donald Trump should be the president of the United States once again.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you, but a little different perspective. I think Trump can win because more Biden voters will stay home. Like Josh mentioned, when you look at your last election in 2020, I mean, Trump does a great job of bringing people to vote against him. The good thing about that is we've seen that. We know what that number looks like. And Joe Biden needed record turnout to barely beat him. Okay. So if you take 1 or 2 points, especially when you look at the margin of error in Georgia, when you look at Pennsylvania, here in Arizona, it was like 12,000 votes. 1-2 points, election is different. So I don't know that Trump goes out and gets 82, 83, 84 million votes. He probably stays somewhere around where he's at, if not even a little bit less. But I don't think that legally, and I think we can say this now, because, you know, they talked about nobody cheats in elections, and you've got what's going on in Connecticut where it's legit ballot stuffing.
Yep.
Okay. I know the news is calling it ballot harvesting, right? No, it's not harvesting. They are stuffing. They grabbed a handful of ballots, they filled them out, and they shoved them in the ballot box. But legitimately, I don't think that Joe gets another 81 million votes. And I think what they're worried about is that if you have 1 million voters from each state that don't show up, that's 50 million less. Yep. Right. Now, the number won't be that high, obviously, but you start looking at 20, 30, 40,000 votes or voters, that changes Arizona, that changes Nevada, that changes Georgia, that changes Pennsylvania. I'm still, you know, we've discussed this on previous podcasts. You know, I'm still a little on the fence. I'm a little leery of Michigan and Wisconsin and probably even Pennsylvania. Like, and I think this is what's frustrating to me. I'll throw this out there and then I've actually got another question to ask you. But what's frustrating to me is, as much as I like the Trump 4 years and as much as I like the Trump presidency, if Trump backs DeSantis, it's a landslide. It's over. I mean, I'm convinced if he were to come out and just like, hey, you know what? I'm old. I'm going to go right off in the sunset with Mar-a-Lago and back DeSantis. It is over because I think DeSantis carries Georgia. I think he carries Pennsylvania. I think he carries Arizona. I think he might carry Nevada. And you probably have a shot at carrying Michigan or Wisconsin. Coming around to the question, RFK throws a wrench into the plan, right? And we've had some differing opinions here. And I just keep falling back to RFK. He's a Kennedy and he's a Democrat. I know he will pull votes from both, but I do believe he'll pull more votes from the Democrats and from the Biden camp than he will from the Trump, just because of the Kennedy name and the fact that he was a registered Democrat. Do you see RFK pulling, an independent 20, 22 points, or do you think he's going to fizzle around 5, 10 points? Does he pull enough to make a difference one way or another?
So you have to go back to history, Bush 41 and Bill Clinton, when they had an independent
Ross
Perot. I couldn't think of his name at the moment, but Ross Perot, I think he only had enough to turn over Utah, but that was enough to give Bill Clinton the presidency. Do I see that as another Ross Perot situation? I don't know. I don't think so. I think he gets, like you said, maybe 5% of the vote, if he gets that. I do see him taking more votes away from Biden, though, because there was a poll the other day, and this is why I said you have to watch these polls, because they try to drive the narrative instead of telling you what the people think. They had a poll that said the other day that more people would vote for RFK than they would Donald Trump. And I'm thinking to myself, no, because Democrats stick together. And Republicans, they either don't go vote or they hold their nose and they pull the lever for the candidate they don't like. But a lot of people like RFK. You have his stance on the vaccines. He has a lot of things he disagrees with Biden. He agree like those Democrats that really don't like Trump but want the border secure, they're probably going to go to RFK. I don't see RFK winning the election. But at the same time, I do see him pulling more Democrats votes. And this is a situation to where Biden has to make a decision. Hey, do I step down or do I continue and cost my party the election? And look, a third party never helped nobody. You get what I'm saying?
So Ross Perot pulled 15% of the final vote.
Wow.
That's huge.
And who he pulled it from. He pulled it from George Bush. He didn't pull nothing from Bill Clinton. So now that's a point as well. If Democrats stick together and Republicans that say, well, we're not going to hold our nose and vote for Trump, that might be an issue for the Republican Party. But like you said, he's a Kennedy. Kennedy's always associated with Democrat policies. So I think there's more Democrats. Now, you might lose a lot of blue dog Democrats that feel that old way of the Democratic way. So, like I said, that's a really good tough question to answer at this time.
Yeah, it's not a whole lot of blue dog Democrats left to begin with.
Well, a lot of the blue dog Democrats became a moderate Republican.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point because you know, and even my even growing up, man, my dad, and you know what, you're actually this actually goes to your point. Growing up, my dad was a blue dog Democrat. And now he is straight, he voted for Trump twice and he is straight. He's very conservative now. He's definitely a Republican. So, talking about the elections and stuff, you just had there in Louisiana, you guys just elected a new governor.
Yep.
How's that working out? And like, what are people saying? Are people excited, to have them, or how's that working out?
So I haven't heard from any of my leftist friends, but here on the Republican side, we're happy with Jeff Landry's election. It was a very surprise election. And look, I might get in trouble for this, but I didn't vote for Jeff Landry. They had some things I disagreed with Jeff on, but it was a real toss up. I didn't make my decision probably till 2 days before the election. But the candidate I supported only got 5% of the vote. If Jeff would have got into a runoff election, because we have November 18th coming up, where we have the attorney general's race, we have the secretary of state's race, and we have the state treasurer's race that's coming up. We have to vote for that again. If Jeff would have got into a runoff, I would have voted for Jeff. Jeff's local around here. I've reached out to Jeff's campaign to try to get him onto the show. It never worked out, but hopefully one day. But the energy around here that we finally have a Republican that everybody got around, it's very encouraging. And Jeff announced his campaign team, his transition team. There's people that are critical of his transition team, but we have a supermajority House, we have a supermajority Senate, all Republican. My friend Blake Miguez, the guy I'm wearing right now, won our district seat. He's a strong conservative. The guy that won for our state rep here in my parish, he's a strong conservative. Miss Kelly Alford from District 64 in East Baton Rouge Parish was surprised she got there. She's a physical conservative. She's in a runoff. So there's the state is going red, and it's just not going pink red. It's going bright red. So we have a lot of things. We have a lot of crime in New Orleans, a lot of crime in Baton Rouge. Jeff has already said he wants to tackle that. A lot of state reps that I'm talking to say, look, there's some bills that he wants to put right away. They want to fix our insurance problem here in the state of Louisiana. We have a bright future ahead. Now, it's not going to happen overnight, but at least our governor-elect is ready to stop the blue policies of this state. Because John Bel Edwards, I don't know how he did it, but he's the second most powerful governor in the country. Our legislation just always handed him wins. They would come against him, and he would just push it through and get it in there. So it's going to be nice to have a physical conservative governor, and I just can't wait to see what the next 4 years is going to come about.
Hopefully some results, right? Because that's the biggest issue, and I see that out here in Arizona, where it's actually kind of nice. If you're not following Arizona, we got Katie Hobbs, Democratic governor. She won. We almost had a Trump Jr. run out here with Carrie Lake, who I supported initially before she went completely batshit crazy. But now you've got Katie Hobbs, and you've got a state legislature that's completely red, and she's just a lame duck governor. Right. It's actually pretty great because nothing's happening across the board. It's like, hey, they're passing bills, she vetoes them, and nothing happens. But at the same time, it's not lost on me, like with Arizona, that we've had a red legislature, we've had a red governor since Napolitano. I think she was our last blue governor. And when you look at the shape of our state, which I think we're strong, I think we're healthy, but in areas like education, and there's some other areas that we need help with, it's like, hey, it's not lost on me who's been in control of the House, the Senate, and our governorship. So at the same time, I think that is the difference between us three. Collectively, we all see the same. Hey, call a spade a spade. I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. I want the best thing for my state, right? And you can be a Republican, and if you're running my state into the ground, then we need to elect somebody else. Go ahead.
And that was the thing with Louisiana, though. Okay, 4 years ago, John Bel shouldn't have won. But the way that we run our election, I think in North Carolina and Arizona, they do it a lot different. Y'all have primaries, and then you have a general election.
Right.
We have a general election, yep. And if you don't get over 50% of the vote, which Jeff did, Jeff got 52% of the vote. Me and my team here that were following the election was shocked. But the last two elections prior to Jeff's election, John Bel Edwards won, and the Republican got pretty close, but he backed in both times because one Republican said, hey, I'm not going to vote for him because I lost the race. They got hurt. They were butthurt. And it, John Bel Edwards, all he did was sit back and let the Republicans fight amongst themselves. And that was the issue. And that's why Jeff Swain was so impressive, though, because I think he's the second governor ever to win 50% or more in the first round. We always go into a governor's runoff. And for, you know, Pothole Wilson not even to make the runoff, that was just showing how much people in Louisiana were fed up with policies. Because, look, every time we would have something good in Louisiana, John Bel Edwards would shoot it down. Look, even the tax cuts from Trump. You remember when Trump passed all them tax cuts and everybody in America was happy? I was happy for one check. Because John Bel, the week after that was signed, said, hey, I'm going to push taxes through. I call them rhinos that were sitting up in Baton Rouge, went ahead and said, yeah, that's some good ideas. We'll get money in our pockets. They passed the tax. All Trump's tax cut went back to the state. So it really didn't help me out. It didn't help me out whatsoever because we had a blue governor. And I was like, oh, no, this dude got to get out. And people remember that, but he still won in the second round. So for people to vote Jeff, and look, we had a low turnout. A lot of people pointed out we had 36%, I think, of the state turnout in vote. So, but even that, to be honest with you, I'd rather have a low turnout of informed voters than a high turnout of people that just, oh, he has a D behind his name, I'm going to vote for him.
Yeah. No, I agree. I definitely agree with that. Roger, you were going to ask me something.
Yeah, I was going to ask what you're seeing out there in North Carolina, because you've got kind of a mixed bag where you've got Roy Cooper as your governor still, and then you've got a lot of, obviously, your urban areas, they lean Democrat. And then, you know, most of your rural areas are more conservative. Are you seeing more of a conservative shift? And maybe not even a conservative shift. Are maybe you seeing less Biden favoritism? Or what's your take on North Carolina?
So, you know, keeping track of the local news and stuff, there's definitely a little bit less of Biden favoritism. So, you know, and I live in Dorothy Ruby Red Slippers Red County. I mean, it is overwhelmingly red. And, you know, so we got life pretty good. But if for the state as a whole, though, it's a lot of people are frustrated with the state legislature. Because if you remember, Tricia Cotham here last year, she was a Democrat. She switched over to a Republican, which gave the GOP a supermajority in the state legislature. So Roy Cooper could veto all he wanted to, but he could veto it. And then, like, I think it's like 7 days later, it becomes law, you know, because the state legislature is just, hey, man, you know what? It is what it is. It is fantastic, right? And so basically, Roy Cooper is kind of like Katie Hobbs. He's a lame duck governor. But people are frustrated with the GOP at the state level right now. And this is really indicative of, you know, the GOP across the country. You would think after all of these things, you know, those issues that the GOP has been pushing for, you know, years now, constitutional carry, ID for voting, you know, the trans issue, you know, no trans, you know, surgeries for kids and, you know, none of this stuff. You would think they would have those bills and that legislation ready to go. Right. It took them 8 months, 9 months, just to get school choice passed in North Carolina. It was like, you have a supermajority. Like, that stuff should have been sitting on the shelf, ready to go. And as soon as the opportunity presented itself, you jam that thing in there. You know, I mean, we have, you know, you go back and you look at the government, like the Department of Defense has a plan to invade the Bahamas, right? We have a plan to invade every single country on earth. It is sitting on the shelf. It'll probably never be used, but it's there. And all you need to do is dust it off, you know, update it, change the date on it, and it's good to go. And so, but when you look at the GOP in North Carolina, they got caught flat-footed. They didn't have anything on there. And then it took a month. And it's like, hey, guys, constitutional carry. Like, that should be super easy because the governor can't veto it. He can veto it, but it becomes law anyway.
Yeah, so my good friend Danny McCormick, he pushed these bills through, and when he put it through the second time, he had to pull it because the Republicans had the supermajority, and it was like, yeah, we can get this passed, and it's going to be concealed carry, so everybody in Louisiana could carry without a permit. And when he went looking at the bill, they added so much stuff in there. He's like, this ain't even the same bill I pushed. So he pulled it back. So Josh, like you said, your Republicans, they're not much different than our Republicans. I want to give you, you know, have comfort in that.
And that's nationwide, though. That's nationwide, yeah. Because that's one of the things that we complain about. It is Obamacare all over again and John McCain, right? This stuff should have been on the shelf. You've got complete, because it happens, right? We all know history. It's cyclic. Every several years, you'll get one party that controls both the presidency and the House and the Senate. That generally happens for 2 years. And you can pretty much push through whatever you want. The Democrats have been great. I mean, hell, they passed the you know, Obamacare behind closed doors. And then for what, 6-8 years, we're trying to get rid of this thing. We finally have the majority. And what happens? Oh, yeah, we don't really have a bill ready. So, you know, it's not even a state thing. It's nationwide. But the main reason that we brought you on here, Isaac, we want to give you some bragging rights here. I want to get your thoughts because you're local to the area where this guy's from. I've seen him a couple of times. I know Josh is a little familiar with him. We watch a lot of news and this and that. But we have a new Speaker of the House, right? We've got a plume of white smoke that came up from the Capitol. So we have a new Speaker of the House. So what are your thoughts on Mike Johnson, a little bit of maybe his background, what's his reputation around there, and what do you expect from him during this next year or two?
So a little bit about Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson is, I think, District 4 state congressional rep for the state of Louisiana, Bible-believing Christian. If you watch the news, you notice that the left is attacking him because he said that my worldview is what the Bible says. And I'm like, yes. And you know when the demons start manifesting, when a Christian says, hey, the Bible's our worldview. But he's a strong conservative, man. Like I said, a lot of people in the country did not know who Mike Johnson was. We were very familiar with him. I heard him on a local affiliate radio shows here. Real strong conservative. To what I heard, was a real nice guy. I think he's going to do well. He's already showing that he's trying to bring more unity into it. Before he puts any spending bill out there, he's teaming up with the Democrats. Now, a lot of people are like, well, that's bad. No, as Speaker of the House, you're supposed to do that. And you're supposed to try to work out some type of deal. Mike Johnson, he looks calm, but he's very strong in what he believes. So I think he's going to be a real good speaker. And look, like I said, I'm going to brag a little bit. The speaker, it ain't just the speaker of the House that is from Louisiana. The majority whip is from the House as well, Steve Scalise.
Oh, that's right.
And no. So you have Louisiana is being represented very well up in the Capitol right now.
That's good. Yeah, you know, the whole the path for Mike Johnson to, you know, to get in the speaker seat. I get what Matt Gaetz did. And I don't disagree with what Matt Gaetz did. I was not a fan of Kevin McCarthy. I didn't want Kevin McCarthy to be speaker to begin with. I was adamantly opposed to Kevin McCarthy. But it did seem that Matt Gaetz went in there and didn't have a plan. Him and the other, you know, and the eight, they didn't have a plan because, you know, it spun into, okay, well, who's going to be the speaker? You know, and it was like, well, Steve Scalise and then Jim Jordan and then this and then that, you know, they had multiple votes up and down. And it was like, okay, well, who are we going to have? So it just, you know, and then they said, okay, Mike Johnson. And I'll tell you, I didn't know anything about Mike Johnson. You know, when they were like, Mike Johnson, I was like, I don't even know who that is. Like, I mean, that is like, I mean, that's like, that's just, yeah. It was like, I don't know. He's not, because he's not one of those people you hear about. He's not in the light, you know, in the news, in the limelight a lot. Which is actually, I mean, in this day and age, it's a good thing. So, you know, looking at him, the Ukraine bill, you know, that's going to get pushed. You know, there's going to be an Israel spending bill that's going to get pushed. You know, now there's a lot of people who are like, okay, well, why did we trade Kevin McCarthy for Mike Johnson? You know, and this, you know, I mean, the looming government shutdown, I think, is obviously going to be his first big test as speaker. To see if he can, you know, get something through that's, you know, gonna appease the GOP. Right now, they're working on two plans. One's a clean continuing resolution, you know, which to me is, you know, we're just gonna kick that can on down the road, you know, and beat that can to death as we have over the last, I don't know, decade and a half with, you know, with CRs. And the other plan is that it's going to be like a tiered bill. to where, you know, some government institutions and some branches, you know, they'll get funded incrementally, you know, over a period of time, you know, in tranches. So, you know, we'll see what it is, you know, but I think Mike Johnson, he's going to get tested very, very early with this, you know, because, I mean, it's what, November 17th, I think, is the government supposed to shut down. And then, you know, even that clean CR, listen to the news, that clean CR would only fund the government through the middle of January. So we'll get to do it all again when everybody comes back from the holidays, you know, and so it's a, yeah, we'll see how he does. And because he's going to get tested very quick, he's going to get tested early and often. So that's going to do us on this episode. I'm going to kick it back over to Isaac here in a second. He can give us his final thoughts on what's going on in Israel, and then we'll be done. So I don't have any shout outs this week or anything. We will get them out next week. So Isaac, last question, man, and I'm gonna give you the honor of closing this episode out.
All right.
of C3. What do you think, you know, what do you think the near future holds for Israel?
Well, I'm gonna say this as a Christian: keep your eyes up, because he's coming back soon. So Bible says when the nation starts surrounding Israel, look up, because your redemption draws nigh. I think Israel has every right to defend themselves. And look, you had pro Hamas protesters run to the Capitol last week and run to the White House, and you did not hear the media say that was an insurrection. You know, waving foreign flags and all that stuff. I'm just that incident alone shows who started this war. Every Palestinian in this world is blaming Israel, but they forget that Hamas was the ones that broke through the border. They killed 1,400 people, and those same Palestinians that are asking to stop the genocide in Gaza was the ones dancing on the streets that Jewish people died. And now they have the nerve to call for a ceasefire. That's like a bully throwing the first punch, and then you realize that the skinny little guy you picking on knew karate, and he's beating your rear end in the streets. Now you, it's not my fault. I think this whole incident is very heartbreaking, because you're losing lives on both sides. But in my opinion, the Gaza Strip and the Hamas terrorists, they asked for this. You poke the bear long enough, guess what? It's going to come back and bite you. And Israel has a right to defend themselves. I wish we had a leader like Benjamin Netanyahu on this stance, because like Roger said earlier in the podcast, we got service members that are getting hit with rockets. And what the president is doing, he's looking for his favorite ice cream place to get his favorite ice cream cone. It's sad.
Nope. Agree on all, and for sure. So that's going to do it for this episode, folks. We really appreciate you listening. As we always say, you know, time is your greatest commodity that you have. It's the one thing that you're never ever going to get back, and you know, we really appreciate you spending that time with us. So in between, you know, our C3 episodes coming out episodically, Isaac has a good cadence over there. You know, in between C3, make sure you get over there, give Isaac a follow, smash that follow button on all of the social medias, and you know, give him a listen and support him. We would greatly appreciate it. So until next time, that's going to do it for us at the Cup. Keep those canteen cups full, and we'll see you next time.